She was not dead, but in a trance, and I knew at once why she was there. She was mediumistic, and from her I could build up for the time being a temporary habitation of some sort. I moved towards her, and began to draw from her the more etherealized elements, at the same time exerting my powerful will to the intent that he should see me. Soon he did so. I doubt if, as yet, an ordinary mortal would have been able to, but he was possessed of clairvoyance, though not in the highest degree. As I became visible to him, I perceived that I gave out a kind of lurid red light. It was not much like the brilliant red fire of the opera when Mephistopheles appears, but it is evidently from some such phenomena as I was now producing that the tradition had grown up. I am not quite sure of the reason, whether it was due to the predominance of hatred in my aura, or simply because the wizard expected me to come in that form. But at any rate, if he expected horns and a cloven hoof, he did not get them. I could see that he was quaking with fear, but he pulled himself together and cried, "Come hither, slave, I command." "Slave be damned," I replied. "I'm no one's slave. If you want my services, you've got to pay for them." This seemed to disconcert him a little. You see, it did not follow along the traditional lines of evoking evil spirits according to the ancient legends. As a matter of fact, stories of these sort of things emanated almost solely from the mouth of the magician and were doubtless colored accordingly. After a few moments he said, "What is it that you demand?" Now the correct answer, I suppose, should have been "Your immortal soul," but I didn't care a twopenny cuss about his soul. So it was my turn to hesitate. At last I replied, "What have you to offer me?" At once came the answer, "My soul. That's no use to me, and in any case it's damned already. No, I want something which will benefit me personally." "Well, what if I give you a mortal body so that you walk this earth in the semblance of a man? Can you do this, for I have not an astral body?" I inquired. "Nevertheless, I can manufacture one for you and so enable you to obtain control of a physical one." And he spoke the truth, for by his knowledge of the occult he was able to draw around him a host of empty astral shells and of the lighter elementals. Seizing on one of the latter, I molded it into a semblance of my former self and found I had an astral body. Then, going over to the medium, I with his assistance built up a real material body. I gave a shout of delight. After all that nightmare of horror, I was back on earth again. But even as I did so, I felt that it was but a temporary release. "Can I go outside?" I inquired. "I doubt it," he replied. "Still, you can try." I climbed up the stone stairs and came out into the broad daylight. The effect was magical as well as unpleasant. I seemed to dissolve, or at least my physical covering did. I hurried down into the cellar, and we had to start the materializing again. "Well," I said, "a body which melts in the sun is not much good. You'll have to do something better than that." "You can always," he whispered, "take control of someone, and with care this materialized kind of body will enable you to get about in the dark." In return for this, I agreed to help the magician in his plans. Chapter 14. The evil that they wrought. Gold, power, and revenge were the chief things he desired. At the same time, he did not despise lesser advantages. He had about a dozen women over whom he had acquired absolute control, and who were all mediumistic. These he used to help him materialize spirits and produce other phenomena. I helped him to acquire much gold. It was a simple process. I could pass through matter in my astral form and dematerialize some of the gold, carry it out into a place of safety, and there it would take up again the material elements, which for a time had been scattered. This process needed expenditure of considerable willpower, and an easier method was for me to take control of some denizens of the house in which the gold lay when asleep or in a trance. These would collect as much as they could carry and convey it to some place arranged by the magician and myself. Then they would return, and would have no recollection of what had happened next morning when they awoke. Once or twice they were followed and arrested, but though they were punished for theft, no suspicion fell on the student of the occult. Of course, when arrested, I cleared out and left the unfortunate spirit to re-enter his body and shoulder the responsibility. I was just as useful to my master in carrying out his schemes of revenge, for he had many enemies. He had a particular dislike of all forms of religion, and vented it upon the clergy whenever he got an opportunity. At first he contented himself with slight damage. Tricks were played on his victims by elementals. Things were thrown about the room, crockery was smashed. When asleep his victim was awakened by having the clothes pulled off the bed, his face smacked, and his nose tweaked. But as time wore on and he found that he could do these things with impunity, his vicious character developed. Pinching and teasing gave place to physical violence. His victims were beaten black and blue or thrown downstairs, and attempts were made to set the house on fire. As the phenomena became more and more malevolent, the elementals for the most part dropped out, and even the spirits of the dead who had served him began to resist. They did not dare openly to defy him, for he had methods of making even them suffer, but they did the work half-heartedly and badly. J. W. But how did he make the spirits suffer? By his will. He, as it were, hypnotized them. This batch were weak-willed folk whom he compelled to do what he liked. He made them suffer, if they resisted, just as we make each other suffer in hell. He found, however, that though I could not be threatened and bullied, yet I was far more willing than they to inflict suffering upon men. Meanwhile, I had not neglected my own interests. Besides settling a few old scores and even partaking again, when materialized or controlling, of some of Earth's former pleasures, I had also been building up my influence over my master. Some of the scenes in that old cellar under his house would have filled you with amazement. There would be at least a dozen of his girl mediums, some normal, others in trance, and in addition sometimes as many as a dozen materialized spirits. Except myself, these spirits came from the astral plane, and were constantly changing as one after another hurled themselves out of their astral bodies through one or more of the occult sins. These materialized spirits would stand or sit and talk and even laugh and sing and dance. Nor were these innocent recreations all, but I will draw a veil. Sometimes in the best vein of medievalism the wizard would celebrate the Black Mass, and we were the congregation. Meanwhile, however, I found it necessary constantly to renew my astral body. The mere fact that it was not really my own rendered it fragile and liable to disintegrate, and, further, the evil I was constantly doing hastened the dissolution. The result was that, despite obsessing many people, I was constantly requiring new astral bodies. At length my master called upon me to murder a man who had somehow got on the track of some of his deeds. I followed him to his house unseen, and between 1 and 2 in the morning set to work. Standing at the foot of his bed, I willed, and as I did so became visible in my astral body. The dull red glow which always seemed to accompany me shed no illumination beyond making me visible. I willed still harder, and the wretched man saw all around him a host of evil shapes, bloated monsters, elementals of every form and kind, while besides these were the malevolent faces of evil men and women. They shrieked death to the traitor, tear him to pieces, and almost every moment they rushed at him as if about to carry out their threats. They were unable to do so, for it is very difficult for a non-physical being to hurt the body of a mortal unless he has done something to put it in their power. But this wretched victim did not know that, and he was in an agony of terror. Then I cried aloud, "Have you forgotten Anna? We are here to avenge her. She is now in hell, and has sent us to bring you there also." As a matter of fact, she had not sent us, and we did not know whether she was in hell or not. He screamed, "My God, after all these years must that sin rise up and condemn me?" We laughed derisively and went on in chorus, "She calls, she calls. Come away, come away." We rushed at him again and again, we cursed him and jeered at him, and so all night long till morning broke we tormented him. The next night it was the same, and again on the third night. And all the while I kept urging him on, "Better death, kill yourself, there is no hope. You are going mad. Better kill yourself before you go mad and kill someone else. Oh, Anna, can you not forgive me? I was but a young man and did not realize all it meant." Then one of the spirits assumed the shape of Anna, and, standing at the foot of the bed, cursed him, until, driven desperate, he sprang out of bed and, seizing a razor, cut his throat. My master was delighted by the success of these operations, and I urged him on to attempt something similar against a young priest whom he hated. This man had denounced him as being in league with the devil, which was largely true, and therefore angered my master the more. We plagued him, but though we caused him much annoyance by disturbing his sleep and so forth, we failed to hurt him much. Then I inspired one of the prettiest village maids to fall desperately in love with him. She followed him about for weeks, and finally threw herself on her knees in the church, while pretending to confess, and begged for his love. This refused, I turned her love to anger, and she spread all sorts of ugly rumors concerning him. Then we attacked him again more fiercely. We scoffed at his religion and told him it was false, or else the good God would not allow us to come to him. We told him he was about to be disgraced, and we urged him to escape the consequences of his evil life by suicide. The poor devil had had a remarkably innocent life, as a matter of fact, and was not quite such a fool as not to know it. We persecuted him like this for weeks until, at length one night he cried, "I believe you are sent by that wretched old man whom I denounced as in league with the devil. I'll go and tell him what I think of him now." At once we urged him to do so, for, once there, it would be strange if our master could not finish him off. Seizing a crucifix, he stepped out into the darkness, and we followed him, jeering and threatening him. It was a wild night, a fit setting to the tragedy. The wind howled and the rain beat in his face. Overhead the lightning flashed and the thunder roared. I shrieked in his ear, "Hark to the voice of God denouncing you, you hypocrite. Look at his lightning threatening to blast you. See how the whole face of heaven is black against you. Accursed of God and man, soon will you come to us in hell." At length he reached the door of my master's house and knocked. It was opened, and he found himself in a dark passage. No one spoke, and he stumbled forward seeking a door. The first one he reached was locked, and so was the second, for some of us had gone forward to warn the magician. But a door at the end was not fastened. He opened this, and, entering, found the magician waiting for him in a dimly lighted study. The priest denounced him fiercely, but the magician answered not a word, but gazed fixedly at him till his denunciation died slowly away, and he stood there silent, a disheveled figure, with a hunted look upon his face. At length my master spoke, "You fool, what made you come here? Your doom is sealed." He began to chant an invocation, and as he did so we gathered round and recommenced our work of persecuting the poor wretch. Again the master spoke, "Tomorrow you will be denounced before the whole of your congregation. I have two women here who will bear witness that you seduced them and were in the habit of visiting them here. I caught you tonight, and it is because I have suspected you for some time and done my best to frustrate your evil designs that you have denounced me as in league with the evil one." "It is false," he shrieked, "and you know it. I will deny it and tell the whole world of the evil spirits who obey your commands. And who will believe you? If they don't consider the story a lie, they will declare it is due to drink or madness. No, my fine fellow, you're done for, and it will be a nasty blow for religion too." While he was speaking he threw a heavy weight at the priest, which felled him to the ground. "Don't kill him yet," I urged. "Wait till he has been thoroughly discredited." "Not I," he replied. "I only intend to obtain some evidence of his guilt, a few trinkets which the two women can produce as evidence. A lock or two of his hair, to begin with, this handkerchief, and this seal from his watch chain. Can't we get him to commit some sin?" I urged. My master jumped at the idea, but, almost at the same moment, we were overwhelmed with a flood of light. It seemed to burn and scorch me, and its whiteness was so intense that no words of mine can describe it. This light came from a gigantic spirit of commanding and awful presence, his guardian angel. He spoke, and his words rang out like a trumpet. "No man may be tempted beyond that which he is able to resist. Ye have been permitted to tempt and persecute this man that he might come forth from the temptation strengthened by it, but your work is finished. The cup of your iniquities is filled to the brim. Go down to the depth of hell, and go thither also, thou spirit from hell, Return to a place even lower than that from which thou camest. As he spoke, the fire seemed to burn me through and through, and the magician fell dead. His spirit rapidly separated from its body, and then the astral body, exposed to that terrible light, shivered and shattered and fell away. The naked spirit fell with an agonized shriek, and vanished from my sight. At the same instant I felt myself whirling through space down into utter darkness. But when I realized I was in hell, I was not back in my old kingdom or in the city of hate. I had sunk still lower, and had almost reached the bottom division of hell. But of what befell me there I will tell you at another time. J. W. Before I go, can you explain why you appeared red when you came back to Earth? H. J. L. Interrupted. I think it was not only because the sorcerer expected to see him like that, but more because his aura was full of the red rays which represent anger and hate. As you know, our auras change color with the passion that dominates us at the time. J. W. Your story, officer, grows more and more extraordinary as it proceeds. I doubt whether that part about the magician will be believed, though I know you are telling the truth. You see, magic has fallen into such disrepute, hardly anyone believes in it now. The officer. I don't care a damn whether they believe it or not. It is true, and only by relating it can I explain what next befell me. I should not have sunk lower if it had not been for that adventure. H.J.L. Goodbye, Jack. You must be off now. Next moment I lost consciousness. J. W. Chapter 15, His Punishment. The Second Division. Real Devils. Transvision, May 18, 1914. The officer resumed his narrative. As soon as I realized my position, I began to hunt about, and was not long in discovering that, bad as the division above had been, this was worse. The darkness seemed more intense and the place seemed very empty. But this latter was not for long. I heard wild yells of despair, shrieks, and screams, and out of the darkness burst a herd of spirits, and behind them I saw for the first time the real spirits of evil, of which the devils usually described are but shadows. I had seen those shadows occasionally on the astral plane. They were the figures formed by the imagination of those who had believed in them, but these were something different. They had not bat wings, cloven hoofs, or horned heads, as usually depicted, though the devils formed by the imagination of men and found on the astral plane had them. These spirits, who had never been men, were some of the most appalling creatures it is possible to imagine. They were driving the herd of spirits before them, lashing at them with what were apparently whips. As they struck, they cried out, "How like you, your master, the devil?" Then they shouted the most fearful blasphemies, and screamed, "Blaspheme, you swine, blaspheme. We are the real gods, the things you call gods are but figments of your brains." Even as they were shouting this, they reached me, and one struck me across the face. Acting on the principle I had always followed, I turned upon him savagely, but this time it was no use. Again and again I was struck, and knew that at length I had found my master. I fell writhing to the ground beneath these savage blows, but at once someone plunged what appeared to be a goad into me, and I sprang up with a yell and rushed madly forward with the rest of the herd. Now began a period of awful terror. On and on we were hunted through these great dark spaces, without stay or intermission, till I began to feel as if all that was really I was being hammered out of me. We could not speak to each other, we simply stumbled and fell, got up again, ran on, heedless of each and all. There were men and women here side by side. Most wore clothes, though a few were stark naked. The clothes were of all ages and countries, and were mostly torn and ragged. We were able to perceive each other in the murky air, but we could not see the country through which we ran. We ran out of the darkness into the darkness, knowing nothing, caring nothing, if we could but escape from the whips of our masters. And behind us rose that wild chorus, "How like you, your master? Our burden is heavy, our reward small. On forever. There is no hope for you. You are damned forever. This is the unpardonable sin, for you have worshipped the devil instead of God. No, there is no God. Men do but beguile themselves when they say there is a God. There is no such thing as good except as the opposite of evil. Evil really exists, good does not. There is no such thing as a good man. Christ is a myth. We are the only beings who are real. Despair. Weep. Your good days are over. It were better for you if there had been no such thing as life after death. We served you in the world, now you must serve us in turn. These and constant other taunts and jeers greeted our ears the whole time. Most of what they said was lies, said to reduce us to utter despair, and the more dangerous because there was a certain modicum of truth in it. I soon found that I was quite unable to read what was in their minds, as I had been able to do with the men in the division above. They seemed, by the mere exercise of their wills, to be able to build up a wall round their thoughts which I was quite powerless to penetrate. At length I cried to one of the devils, "Is there no way by which I can become one of the drivers instead of one of the driven?" "Yes," he cried, as he lashed me in the face, "yes, if you will go back to the division above and bring down 100 spirits. It can easily be done. Make them believe in the devils and worship them. Have the black mass, and this will soon hurl them down." "How can I return to that division?" I inquired. "One of us will quickly show you the way, but think not that you will be able to escape us when there. No, we allow you to go to do our work, and we shall know at once if you try to escape us." Chapter 16. He undertakes to recruit for the devils. I was allowed to stop behind while the rest whirled on along their never-ceasing path. I looked at this malevolent being who had been deputed to guide me. He was far larger than I, and seemed made of darkness, if you can understand me. Never for 2 minutes did he look the same, not merely his face, but his whole form seemed to be constantly changing. He was robed in a long flowing robe of black, but even while I looked he became stark naked. Then he changed, and became like a goat, and even while I was struggling with my amazement he became a python. He next resumed his man's shape. Man's, did I say? No, no man, however vile, looked as diabolical as this creature did. The face was hideous in the extreme, the eyes were oblong and glittered like a snake's, the nose was hooked like an eagle's beak, the mouth was full and armed with teeth which were pointed and almost like tusks. Malevolence and debauchery seemed stamped on his features, while his hands were almost like talons. They looked so bony. From his body darkness seemed to ooze. Again he changed and became a column of red flame, which yet gave no light, and from this awful flame came a voice, "Follow this way." We moved along thus, me and the moving column of flame. Presently out of the gloom I heard the sounds as of discordant chanting, and soon I saw what appeared to be a mountain, and, on approaching nearer, saw there was a cave, and in it many spirits. My guide assumed his semi-human form, and we entered the cave together. Here we heard the dang of cymbals and the blare of trumpets, and, the mingling with them of shrieks and cries as well as of discordant singing. Soon we saw a great throne, and in front of it a huge cauldron of what seemed like fire blazed and roared. On the throne was seated a hideous monster, and into the cauldron they were flinging little boys and girls, who screamed as if they were really burning. Of course it felt like burning, you know. "Are those really children?" I inquired. "No," he answered. "They are men and women whom the stronger will have compelled to assume that form, and then offer up in sacrifice. Every now and then some of the real devils raid the place and throw the whole lot into the furnace. No young children come here. Here are the devils." As he spoke a wild shriek arose from the worshippers, and a band of evil spirits rushed into the temple and drove us all, save my guide, into the great cauldron. What it was that burnt, whether it was the will of the evil spirits, I don't know, but I suffered awful agonies. At length the evil spirits disappeared as swiftly as they had come, and we crawled out. The rest resumed their service, and I made my way towards my guide. He grinned ferociously and said, "Truly my yoke is heavy, is it not? It will be still more so unless you bring us a fine batch of worshippers." I will," I screamed. "But why do you want more worshippers? You only torture us when you have us." "Because we hate you with an intensity of which your feeble brains have no comprehension. You think you know how to hate, but it is but a feeble imitation of that which is almost our life to us. We hate you." As he screamed these words, he seemed to burst into a raging fire, and it was some time before he resumed his human shape. "Now to your work," he cried, and moved swiftly along for some time. Presently we seemed to be climbing, but whether we really did, who can say? Suddenly he seized me and sprang with me into space, and next thing I realized was that I was back in the division above. I at once perceived that it was not in the city of hate that I had been placed. My evil guardian cried, "Now remember, you cannot stay here for long. Your body has become too gross even for this division of hell, and any treachery on your part will be at once punished by the most awful torments. Moreover, I shall immediately fetch you back. I cannot stay here in any comfort, but I shall know what you are doing and thinking, so beware." He had gone. With what a sigh of relief I realized it, but I foresaw that any respite would be but short. However, a brilliant idea struck me. If I succeeded in bringing back a good batch, it was likely that I should be sent out again, therefore I would try. I found that I was in the miser's country, and the great terror which haunted them was the fear that someone would rob them of their gold. Of course they had no gold, and if they had, it would not have been of the slightest use. But still their old instincts of fear and greed were still all powerful. I soon found that I could work these vices to my advantage. To some I promised that if they would worship the devil he would give them as much gold as they wanted, to the others I promised protection from the tyranny of the rest and the fear of losing all they had. By dint of much hard work I collected a nice little band, who, under my instructions, performed the black mass. At first the evil spirits seemed to pay but little heed to us, but, after a time, one or two of them appeared. At length, at one of the services, I noticed a sensation of being dragged, and so did all the congregation. I knew at once what it meant, though the others did not. It meant that a spiritual connection had been formed, and we were about to fall to our own place. The feeling of attraction, almost akin to the law of gravity, grew stronger and stronger, and at length we seemed to be falling. The surroundings slipped away past us, the solid ground appeared to give way, and we fell. We had indeed become too gross for even the spiritual elements of hate to hold us, and the attraction of what we had made our God drew us towards it. Chapter 17. He falls into the lowest depth of hell. As soon as we reached the land of those accursed devils, we were surrounded by them on every side. I looked now for my promised reward, but instead heard this from one of them: "You have acted the part of a devil and lured men to destruction, but without even the excuse that we have. We are of a different order to men and hate them, but you are of their order and have not the excuse of hating them. You have betrayed your fellow men simply for your own selfish ends. It matters nothing to us, but if you imagine you can change a man into a devil simply by aping one, you are a fool as well as a knave. Our nature and yours is different. Back with the others, you cur." I slunk back among my victims, but only for an instant, for they, furious at my treachery, which, of course, they divined, instinctively hurled themselves upon me, and tried to tear me to pieces. Then succeeded a wild nightmare, in which the demons lashed us forward, and my victims strove to tear me to pieces. I suffered the same anguish as if they had succeeded, but still lived on to suffer again and again. At length I shook myself free and fled, and they pursued. What really happened next I cannot truly describe or even remember. Like some frightful nightmare I ran on, and, after a time, I appeared to be leaping and falling downwards. At length all deliberate motion on my part ceased, yet still I fell down, 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 and it seemed as if I should never reach the bottom. After an interminable age my downward course was stayed. I appeared to be completely immersed in some spongy mass. It was neither firm ground nor water nor even marsh. It was something which has no real counterpart on earth. It was the most tangible form of darkness I met within all hell. Of course all the darkness of hell is tangible to spirits from even this plane. This spongy fog gradually stopped my downward passage, but I felt no firm ground beneath my feet. The same spongy mass was above and below and around, as solid above my head as below my feet. There was no sound, no sight, nothing, absolute nothingness, solitude intolerable, black despair, misery unspeakable.